have Holly walk us through as she did yesterday. Was it yesterday?
Yes,
it was. Gee whiz. Oh, God, it seemed like a few years back. And but we will bolt them up and down conceptually so that Holly can put them in the legal form that we would then come back on. Is it Friday?
Friday morning at 8.
Friday morning at 8 and to vote out the amendments. So with that, Holly, you want to walk us through? And we still need, if the other members are within hearing distance or visual distance, we need a couple of you so that we're able to vote these out.
Madam Chair?
Senator Fisher?
Are we without that beautiful diagram and outline that we had yesterday? Or?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at your place, you should have, like yesterday, the summary of each amendment that we received yesterday and the section-by-section summary from yesterday. However, since that time, we have received the dash 26, 27, and 28, which are not included in your summary.
Oh, okay.
But yes, you should have that summary before you, and copies
of the... So the summary is the same as it was yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. So I can use my notebook.
And you can use it should be included in your notebook. So we've got you covered.
Gee. Talk about efficiency. Thank you, Margie.
Mm-hmm. So.
All right, Holly. Yeah, the suggestion was that you review 26, 27, and 28 first.
Oh, okay. I'll do my best.
I can lose all my notes.
A little extemporaneous speaking here. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Holly Robinson from the Office of Legislative Counsel. You have three new amendments before the committee's consideration today, the 26s, the A27s, and the A28s. The A26s take the reporting requirement that was included in the A25s that talks about information that fully capitated health plans would be required to report to the department regarding their cash flow, financial reserves, outstanding provider claims, and quarterly reports of claim payment time and information about pharmaceutical rebates, and had that as a freestanding amendment separate from the other information or the other amendments that were in the A25s, which were significantly longer. The A27s are now a standalone amendment that have in them a category of individuals who would be exempt from the mandatory enrollment requirements of the bill, and those are your A27s, and those persons would be persons residing in a long-term care facility, a residential facility, or a licensed foster home. And then the A28s are a redraft of the A25s. And now what they have in them is the any willing provider language that only applies to pharmacies. It takes out the mandatory enrollment piece for people and for persons residing in long-term care and residential care facilities. And it makes a change in the automatic payment provisions to 14 days rather than 10. And I think that's it. The other information I wanted to share with the committee was there was a question yesterday about the any willing provider provisions and the Medicaid law and whether it applied, and actually Kentucky statute actually applied on its face to the Medicaid programs, and the statute was upheld, so I don't think that that's a problem. And with that,
there was also some language, and after talking to Holly with respect to the A17s, that the confusion was surrounding mental health, and Holly suggested that a statement in the record would probably satisfy that issue, and it's the statement is that it's not the intent of the legislature to transfer mental health services currently delivered through mental health organizations to any other prepaid managed care health services organization. If you recall, Gina Furman, in her testimony they had some concerns that somehow...
Madam Chair, I respectfully disagree. And I think the amendment ought to be...
You think the amendment ought to be in there?
I want to be very clear what it's saying. On its surface, it says that all these programs have to be served. Shall be. It's pretty strong language. You apply PGE bully to litigation, you're going to get exactly what that says.
Madam Chair, Senator Minnis, I don't believe that the chair is suggesting that that be adopted because it wasn't the right thing. It was the intent, I think, of the amendment was to maintain the status quo. It's hard to write an amendment that says we're retaining the status quo when, at least in my opinion, there's nothing in there that's changing it. That's why we're putting the intent.
Scratch the amendment, make a statement.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I apologize for being late, but did we deal with the emergency ambulance?
Different bill. Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I don't think that's in this context.
In this context, okay, that's what I meant.
Let's start it at the top and work our way through from dash six amendments. Holly, and it is the intent that we walk through these and then up or down on the conceptual amendments.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, well, I'll do my best. The first set of decisions that the committee has to do in the definition section. The A12s modify basically the definitions by taking a term that was already used in this, which is able to serve additional enrollees, and incorporate it into the text of the bill. That's on your handout as a drafting measure. I'm going to do that because I think it's good drafting. It's better. It makes the bill clearer, but you should know that change is going to be there.
Are we on 6 or 12?
You're on the handout that says effective amendments on individual sections of the bill, and I believe the chair is going point by point.
Well,
starting on page one.
I'm looking at 6 in the amendment. Okay, that's good. Okay.
It should be in your... You should have before you...
Thank you.
It says House Bill 3624, A and Gross, mm-hmm. effective amendments on individual sections of the measure. Okay.
So much of this.
Shall I?
You shall
begin. I'm thinking.
Is everyone ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Let's go.
The A10s and the A21s contain the same proposed change, and that is to change the definition or modify the definition of fully capitated health plan and the definition of physician care organization to expand it or to clarify that it means an organization that provides an adequate network of providers to ensure that services are reasonably accessible to enrollees. As we talked about eons ago, which I think was yesterday, that the concept is of reasonable access is one that's required by federal Medicaid law. This change I would submit as a clarification should the committee choose to want it adopted.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morsett.
Okay. You have exempts A and B hospitals in 10, and you have it again in 15, and I'm asking why do you exempt A and B hospitals?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, I'm happy to take your question, but I think we're in a different stage
here.
Well, if we're going, you're in section?
2,
and amendment 10 deals with section 2, right?
Right, but we're only, I think as the chair's intent is to only deal with the definition section right now of the A10 amendments and the A21 amendments.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is that we'll go section by section through the A and Gross bill and address pieces of each amendment that we heard of yesterday and how they amend those sections of the A and Gross bill. So as Holly has just addressed, the A12s the A-10s and the A-21s modify Section 2 of the A and Gross Bill. So I believe then the committee would approve or not approve, each piece that addresses each section.
I guess I'm questioning the wording in...
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, the summaries that you have before you are merely interpretations that other people have reviewed. It's just a summary, but again, having gone through every single amendment,
I'll deal with
each piece, each line.
So those, I mean, as far as the definition sections, those are the questions before the committee right now as to whether or not those changes to fully capitated health plan and or to PCOs the committee wants to make.
And I need to know whether it's a yay or a nay.
And I think the question becomes, for me anyway, is that when we look at Section 10, but we look at the wording of it, of A-12 defines American Indian and Alaskan Native beneficiary, does that take up the language that changes the definition of fully capitated health plan to include these people? And that's what is confusing to me.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, can we back up and let me try to explain what we're trying to get you guys to do. And
okay.
If we fail miserably, then I will take full responsibility. In many ways, this bill has discrete sections. And what we tried to do for you is to take list within by section what the various proposed amendments are. And if and when they impact other parts of the bill, we can talk about it. But in this case, for example, you've been asked to amend the definition of fully capitated health plan, which is on page 1 of the bill, and physician care organization, which is also on page 1 of the bill and in the definition section.
Mm-hmm.
And so those specific things are on the handout that Marjorie did yesterday under Section 2 definitions only. Now, the issue that you've raised, Senator Carter, about American Indians is actually in Section 3 in the mandatory enrollment piece. So to the degree that we can do it section by section, I'd be happy to answer other questions, but I think
when I look at both of these documents, and A-12 amendment says, defines American Indian, requires prepaid managed care organization within 30 days, establishes methodology, da-da-da-da-da. And then when I look at yours, it says, deletes definition of able to serve additional enrollees, modifies, changes definition of fully capitated health plan. A-21 modifies the change of definition of fully capitated health plan. And so...
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, what I would love for you to do
is
take away the piece of paper in front of you that has it, the descriptions by amendments, by the totality of the amendments.
Okay.
Because I think that's what's leading to the confusion. And then as we go through it, I think it will be clearer.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what's happening is you have...
A-12 is coming up here.
Just as in Section 2, the A-10s and A-21s make the same changes, so you don't want to adopt both amendments to make the same
change.
Madam Chair.
A little bit pieces of each amendment.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Amendment 10. Second page, line 2. Tell me what that means.
Section 10. I'm going to pull out
my A-10. A-10, line 2. Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I would be happy to, but can we wait until we get to the discussion of Section 12?
Okay, you want to wait until 12 before we talk about this?
Because currently we're dealing with definition.
We're in Section 2.
Okay.
Not Section 2 of the... I understand your confusion. Not Section 2 of the amendment. Section 2 of the Angross version of the bill. No, yeah. So that Section 2 on that handout...
Here is Section 2 of the Angross.
Right, and which is the definition section. So right now we're in the definition section.
Representative Westland.
I don't know if the committee is to this point yet. But
is it a felt tip?
Assuming that we are... I notice, as a non-voting member of this committee, I can see in Senator Courtney's eyes that he is ready to move conceptually the amendments as represented in Section 2 by the A-12, A-10, and A-21 amendments.
You read well into the good senator's eyes. Senator Courtney.
So move. Madam Chair.
Senator Minnis.
Would you make clear for the record what it is being, that is being moved, please?
Holly, would you make clear for the record what we're doing?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you are requesting a set of amendments that will adopt, that will contain changes to the definition of fully capitated health plan and changes to the definition of physician care organization that will include language that they are organizations that provide an adequate network of providers to ensure that services are reasonably accessible to enrollees, which is the federal access standards.
Are we okay now? Do we know what we're doing?
I need to know. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any objections to accepting the A12?
These conceptual amendments.
These are conceptual.
They're all conceptual.
They're all conceptual.
I have a procedural question.
Yes.
By our rules, do we not have to suspend the rules to take and adopt conceptual amendments? All other committees do unless we adopt a different committee.
Madam Chair, Senator Minnis, you're not actually adopting conceptual amendments because the committee will actually have amendments in front of them. They are giving me signals, to quote Senator Courtney, about how to draft the next set.
Well, okay.
So we're giving Holly signals on how to draft the next set of amendments.
I was operating in a legislative environment where we actually have motions. And
you just give me a thumbs up and a thumbs down?
Signal.
Signal. Wave. Is there any disagreement to giving Holly the signals of conceptually accepting the dash A, section 2, A12, A10, A21? Holly? There's no objection. Go to Section 3.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the section that addresses mandatory enrollment, the requirement of mandatory enrollment in a prepaid managed care organization, and those persons who are either directly exempted or those individuals who will be on the list of exemptions created by the department. I would probably recommend that you take each of these separately. And the first one out of the A12s conforms the reference to American Indian and Native American beneficiary, which are a group that are automatically exempted, and conform those references to Senate Bill 878, which has already passed and been signed.
Is there any
Native Alaskan?
Native Alaskans, I apologize.
So moved, Madam Chair.
Is there any objections?
The second request.
No objections.
Okay. The second request was to exempt persons with chronic or serious health conditions who have special health needs include them on the list of individuals who will be exempted by the department by rule. This is a new category.
Question, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Representative Westland.
Holly, where does this one come from? Do you know?
Madam Chair, Representative Westland, what entity requested it?
Yes.
I mean, where did I think? I don't remember.
My bigger question. Well, go ahead.
I don't remember.
What problem does it purports to correct?
Yeah. What does this do that isn't already covered in the bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Westland, there are a group of individuals currently receiving services, individuals who have serious and chronic health conditions and who have special health needs, whose comfort level was much greater if they were specifically included in the bill. Clearly, the department does have the ability to exempt them by rule, but I think as a group who's now in the fee-for-service system, they were uncomfortable that they were not specifically listed and did not want to rely on the department to exempt them out.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
And this is pertaining only to Section 3 of the bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, that's correct. On the list of persons who the department under the bill may exempt by rule from the mandatory enrollment requirement, this group would be the sixth category.
as I understand, some of the testimony was from individuals who had some special needs, who already had their physicians and what have you, and there was a concern of having to, I think Mike Volpe was one individual.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Senator Carter moved that we conceptually accept dash A21. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Menace.
Can I talk to you? Can we have a 3 minutes?
Yeah, we can have a 5 minutes recess. 2 minutes. A half a second. We're reconvening. Okay.
So it was
A23.
Okay, that was okay. The A23 proposal to Section 3 clarifies that the fee-for-service system would kick in when there is not a prepaid managed care plan available, as opposed to not accepting new enrollees. I would consider this a clarification of what's already in the bill as opposed to new policy.
Move A23 conceptual.
Do we have a consensus?
Consensus. How much long? How about the two talked about the consensus?
Yes, we have.
So we don't move nothing. We just say consensus.
And consensus.
Thank you for that signal.
Okay. We have a consensus. Let's go.
The A25s want to add another category of persons who would be exempted from the mandatory enrollment by rule by the department, and this would be a group of individuals residing in long-term care facilities, residential facilities, or licensed foster homes.
Conceptually move. Consensus.
Question.
Senator Courtney.
This thing took a terrible beating yesterday. And I thought one of the things we were going to look at is separating out the last bullet, all the other bullets for suspect. Is that right or wrong? Give me a signal. Remember this one took a terrible beating? Yeah, I know. So they're over here. So we,
Madam Chair, Senator Courtney, in fact, this was got pulled out of the A25s and is in a freestanding amendment, for whatever it's worth.
So it's pulled out of one of the bullets yesterday.
Right.
It's the A27.
It's now the A27.
I withdraw my consent.
It's
fine. That's good.
So it's in the A27s?
Correct. It's now in the A27.
So we do not have to. We can take it out.
You can consider what's left in the A25s independent of this particular issue. So this issue is in front of the committee on its own.
I'm done.
Do we have a consensus?
Consensus on the A27 replacing this particular thing in the A25.
Holly, we need your help on this between the 25 dash here and the 27.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as I remember yesterday, this issue was, I think the concern around this issue is, I think the concern, and it's really no different than the other one above, and I don't want to speak for them, but I think it's the concern that Representative Bates and Wesson are raising about the department has authority to make certain exceptions, and whether or not this body wants to make its own specific exceptions or rely on the department. I don't think there were any other specific concerns to this. This came from a number of different places, but I think the question is, do you want to grow the list that's in Section 3 or not?
Senator Hannah.
Yes. Is the A27 amendments grow the list?
Madam Chair, Senator Hannan, yes, it grows the list of exemptions that are specifically listed that will then be in statute in the list.
And does the A25s incorporate what's in A27?
It has what the proponents of the A25s wanted left. There's another set, which I think is the 27s or the 26s or the 28s, that has what's left of the 25s that they wanted.
Then A27s could perhaps contain what's in A25, so we probably do not need to have a consensus on 25.
Well, but it's the only point in this, in a way, that if you want to deal with Section 3, you should deal with that issue up or down on that one.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
These programs are under a total different waiver and not subject to this, and I think they definitely need to be in there as an exception. The A27 just deals with that alone and lets the A25 stuff all be changed, and that will be changed down through the list as we go from the 25 into the 27 if we accept that, or 26 or 28. So I would say that we would have a consensus on removing the A25 here, just put the A27 in its place. Then that allows A25 to be thrown out and other things.
We have a consensus to replace the A27 with the A25.
Other way around.
Oh, 25 with 27.
We want this exemption on. You want to grow the list.
Yes.
Okay. Got it. All right, that takes care of Section 3. Section 4 is a continuation of the discussion regarding use of the managed care system versus fee-for-service payment system. The first issue before the committee is whether or not to require prepaid managed care organizations to provide enrollees with information about contacting available providers within 30 days of the enrollee's assignment. This would give them the information that they would need in order to contact their provider.
Do we have a consensus?
Consensus.
I think most FCHIPs do this anyway. How many of the clients take advantage of being able to pick their own provider is I think, somewhat limited. So I don't see any problem with this. Am I missing something?
No. Well, this was one that your chair had requested to ensure that this process was taking place, Representative Bates.
If you'd allow this, but I'd like to have someone from a Floyd County Health Plan explain the difficulty in certain instances of this imposition on them. Can we have a moment to do that, or is it not going to be have time to do that today?
Well, we discussed this, maybe you weren't here.
I was in and out yesterday, so I might.
Of this issue, and one of it is that they can send notifications within 30 days to the individuals. What we did not want to happen was that that individuals weren't being notified and didn't know that they had the opportunity to get a doctor, and that's the reason for the 30 days. And I see.
Madam Chair,
if you want to come up and see if you have if it causes you great pain.
Madam Chair, just as a clarification, this says that they will provide information
right.
about contacting
and available provider.
Not assigning, it's contact.
Yes.
The only explanatory, for the record, my name is Jeff Hetherington, representing the Floyd County Health Plans. We already have this both in our contract and rule. So if you put it in the law, it doesn't mean anything to us because we're already required to do it.
Thank you.
Thumbs up.
Consensus? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm guessing that the A17 is withdrawn, the next bullet on the list.
Is what?
Withdrawn. That was the mental health service provision language that apparently I didn't do right. So I'm assuming I'm going to skip them to the A21s.
Okay.
Section 3,
okay.
Section 4.
So 17 has been withdrawn?
Correct. A21 changes to Section 4 contain a number of enrollee rights or patient rights types of protections that reflect either federal law or the provisions that commercial insurers are now required to comply with.
Consensus.
What's this do? We're on the 821s?
Madam Chair, Representative Westland, it codifies in Oregon law some of the requirements that under federal Medicaid MCO requirements, fully updated health plans and other organizations have to comply with in terms of enrollee rights, and also adapts a provision of the Oregon Insurance Code that affects commercial insurers and applies it to MCOs in terms of involvement of enrollees in the plan and in the policy development.
That never applied to public health care before?
No, but it's comparable to what's required under the federal Medicaid provisions.
Under that BBA or whatever it was?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Madam Chair, Representative Weston, I don't know if it's BBA or something, but if you go through all the pages and pages of the federal Medicare Managed Care Organization regs.
So they are required to do this?
Concepts are required.
It's just making sure that they're in
the concepts are the same.
Conceptual?
The 23s reflect the same changes as the 23s made in Section 3 regarding availability of a managed care plan as either being not in the area or not able to accept additional enrollees. It's a clarification of what the bill already states.
Thumbs up, conceptual. Okay.
Now, the A25s address the issue of any willing provider within an FCHIP. There is an amendment that was proposed that's in one of the new ones, that's in the A28s now, that would limit this any willing provider provision to pharmacy providers only. So if the committee wants to go forward with this issue, it would be that, and this is on the A28, that a fully capitated health plan may not discriminate against any pharmacy provider who wanted to participate. So it has been significantly narrowed by amendment.
Senator Menas.
Madam Chair, you recall the discussion yesterday. I think all the parties are on board on this one.
Yes.
Constrained to the pharmacies. And I would suggest that we adopt that
A28.
I mean, as an agreement here, not an actual motion.
Conceptual. Concurrence.
Consensus.
Consent.
So the A28s
become A25.
This piece of the A28s, which addresses the only willing provider, or addresses Section 4.
And I'm glad Holly knows all this because she will give it to us in order when we get it back on Friday.
That, I believe, if we're done with that one, we go to Section 5. Section 5 as a section is a new provision that would allow the department or directs the department to contract with allows the department to contract with the physician care organization. And the first set of amendments in the bill originally, there had been a number of criteria that the department would be developed by the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research, and the A12s delete one of those requirements, and that is the requirement that the PCO not threaten the financial viability of the other capitated health plans in the area.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Weston.
Let me make sure I understand this correctly. And that is that, assuming this were make it into the bill, and that no... and it became law, then a PCO could establish itself anywhere, even if it were to threaten the financial viability of an existing FCHIP.
No.
Am I missing?
That it can't do that.
Madam Chair, Representative Westland, in a sense, by removing this as... There are currently in the bill three criteria that Uber would use that they would then turn over to the department to make that determination. By removing this, it would be silent. So then what additional criteria the office would develop or that the department would also use, there would be silence in that area as opposed to a prohibition or, I mean, some other direction, legislative direction, I guess, about that issue.
Do we have a consensus on this?
Well, excuse me.
Representative West?
Well, I think we spent a great deal of time when we were crafting the bill, and one of the issues was the introduction of PCOs, which I fully support, but I don't think it creates a fair competitive environment if you have an FCHIP who has to assume hospital risk operating in a given area, and all of a sudden, right next door to him, sets up a primary care organization that does not have to assume a very significant risk, and that is that hospital risk.
Senator Menes.
Madam Chair, I agree with Senator. This was part of their deliberations in the House, so I think, absent some compelling testimony, I think we ought to retain that portion of the bill.
Just a second. Is there any other comments from members? Because I'm going to come back to you. John, you want to elaborate a little bit more on that?
Well, I'm just suggesting that it was part of the deliberations in the House, and I agree with Representative Westland that you've got this competitive environment, and I think that the deliberations in the House were adequate, and unless somebody comes to me and tells me that there's a reason to circumvent that or change it, then I'm not willing to adopt that portion of the Agile Amendment.
Representative Bates.
The other issue involved here, which Representative Westland has spoken to a great degree, is they're trying to control the health care costs in the Oregon Health Plan, and when an organization does not assume full risk, we lose a significant tool in trying to hold those health care costs down with situations occurring. If you're not responsible for the cost of admissions to hospitals and outpatient services, especially hospitals, especially ER services, you're going to have a tendency to offload patients to the hospital system and drive health care costs up. And that was the discussion that went on. To lose this part of it is significant, because a PCO can come in and unfairly compete with a fully capitated health plan because they have less risk to be involved with. And that's why that piece is in there.
Is there non-consensus or consensus?
Consensus to have it in?
Mm-hmm.
In the bill or in the amendments?
In the amendments.
Oh.
Well,
clarification, the Dash 12 amendment takes it out.
It takes it out. Senator Fisher. Is there a consensus to take it out?
Oh, it deletes requiring?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And so I'm hearing a lot of no's.
I thought it was adding.
Am I hearing the thumbs down?
Gone.
I can't count you, Representative Weston. I have to count.
But I can
my
still
Senate
do
members.
This.
I can join.
How many thumbs down do I have? I have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Move we add a law of impersonating a committee member.
It's a First Amendment right.
Okay.
I can do other things with my hands.
The next set of amendments to Section 5, currently the bill as written requires the department to use these criteria. The proposed amendment gives the department a little bit more flexibility and says that they must consider these requirements as opposed to applying them directly.
Consensus?
Yeah.
In fact, your notes are first in line.
This was the A18s.
Consensus? Where to go?
Right. The next set of amendments centers in Section 6. This is the section that directs the department to contract, if I can be direct, with Kaiser Permanente to provide certain health services. And the amendments in the A25s clarify that the contract to the department cannot have a sole contract, or that provider would not be the sole contractor in that designated area, and that the department would have to contract with other entities as well as Kaiser in the designated areas where Kaiser had a contract. I consider it a clarification of the underlying
policy.
Consensus.
Now, is that of the original 25, not the substitute 28?
We're looking at this specific part of the A25.
So we want to maintain that specific part of the A25.
Correct.
Okay.
Thumbs up?
Yep.
Okay. Let's go.
A new language beyond that, then, that were in the A12s, these amendments would establish a new Section 6A that establishes a methodology for setting the capitation rates for physician care organizations. There was nothing in the bill that came over to you that addressed this issue.
Thumbs up. Okay.
Good. Now we go to Section 10, which is going to get a little more complicated. Section 10 is the section of the bill that talks about contracting with FCHIPS to provide administrative services for fee-for-service clients if it's cost neutral to the department. And one of the provisions in here says that one of the services that would be available for an ASO type contract would be prescription drug management services for all prescription drugs except for psychiatric drugs. That reflects a policy choice that also appears later on in terms of the carve out for psychiatric drugs and for antipsychotic drugs and for antidepressants. The first request is that if there were an ASO contract written, that prescription drugs that were dispensed by institutional pharmacies that come through bubble packs and other things be exempted from the ASO process. This was not an issue that was considered by the House. These are drugs that are distributed differently.
Question, Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Why did you use different definitions here than you used for the other exemption on the institutional or the residents of nursing facilities? You used community-based residential facilities in here instead of using residential facilities and together. So why don't we go to a standard...
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, it's because when I work fast, I make mistakes, and we will make sure that the language is similar.
Well, I'm not identical. I don't understand it enough to know, but I would think that we would do well to get a standard, because that was confusing to me yesterday in the other wording.
Madam Chair, Senator Fisher, I get your signal, and we'll make them the same. They should be. If the committee wants this.
Consensus on the A11s? Okay.
The A13 amendments, this is new language, and that would subject the ASO contracts, if they are providing pharmaceutical coverage services, to have to comply with the requirements or make it clear that Senate Bill 819 from last session, the practitioner-managed prescription drug program, would apply to under these circumstances.
Senator Menace, are we in agreement?
Where are we?
We're in agreement. We're on A13.
Yeah, we're on the A13s.
Consensus. Up. All thumbs are up.
The A14s would exempt both, would add antidepressants to the, would add antidepressants to the exception, so therefore if you were contracting for administrative services over prescription drugs, antidepressants and antipsychotics would not be included if you adopted the A14 amendments. This is the carve-out issue. This decision, I think, is going to have to be consistent with the decision that you make in Section 11 about what you want to do with the carve-out.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wesley.
Thank you. When I originally was looking at these, I was under the impression that the A14s exempting the antidepressants was in direct conflict with the A13s. I no longer view it that way since the A13s functionally deal with the fee-for-service population. only, and that the language in the bill in A14 deals specifically with the fully capitated health plan populations. So I don't see any conflicts whatsoever between the 13s, which we've adopted, and the 14s, which I think if we can include, take away from the carve-out the antidepressants and allow the FCHIPs to manage them, would produce cost savings for the state.
Senator Brown.
For Representative Lesslin and Representative Bates, I assume you had an extensive conversation about this carve-out in the House. And I guess my question for you guys would be, what I assume the reason that you included the antidepressants in under managed care was for cost savings.
Correct, and the fact that, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but a very high percentage, 60, 70, 80% of some of these lower level antidepressants, I'm not talking about the first tier psychotropics, are dispensed by primary care physicians in fully capitated health plans. The last thing we're trying to do here is interfere with any of the medications that are taken by this chronic and severe mentally ill. Well, we think those should still be carved out. We fully agree with that. I will allow that in some of the mixes of pharmaceuticals that the chronic and severe mentally ill take, drugs that we fully agree should be carved out, there are sometimes prescribed these lower level antidepressants. I don't know why that would preclude them from getting them. Most of these physicians, or most of these patients, you know, are not seen by primary care physicians. That's not where they're getting their medical services if they are severe and chronically ill.
Senator Brown.
So, Representative Bates, Representative Wilson, I assume you would oppose the amendment based on what you just said.
Correct.
Senator Clark. Well, my concern would be that their primary docs, who deals with a large workforce of people who do administer low-level antidepressants, and why would we want to exclude them?
I'm not sure I have the whole question. The basic problem is laid out by Representative Westland is quite true. 70% or more of antidepressants, which is the vast market here, are prescribed by primary care physicians for people who are depressed, but who are not psychotic. It's a huge difference there. Mixed in that psychotic drug milieu are drugs that are strictly for psychosis. And some of those people, and many of them, are also on somatic depressants or minor tranquilizers.
So are you saying that you want to exempt it so that this could continue, or you want to exempt them so it won't continue?
We want to have an opportunity to manage the use of antidepressants for the population other than antipsychotics.
If you don't mind, I think I'd like to hear from NAMI, and if there's someone from the pharmaceutical company that can come up as well to enter into this discussion.
For the record, my name is Angela Kimball. I'm with the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill of Oregon. And I believe the question was, Chair Winters and members of the committee, where does NAMI stand in terms of the carve-out specified in the -14 amendments? Our concern is that for those who are seriously and persistently mentally ill, that without the carve-out specified in the -14s, that our members may have restricted access to the full array of psychiatric medications, including the antidepressants, that may be part of their array of medications. We understand the difficulty in controlling the costs, particularly for that large segment of the population that isn't seriously and persistently mentally ill. Nevertheless, we feel there are cost containment measures that can be done without putting those medications under the management of the fully capitated health plans. Does that answer the question?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ann Tweet with Bristol Myers Squibb, and we share the concerns that Ms. Kimball laid out for you, and also to delineate some of those alternative cost-saving measures. There will be a presentation before the Ways and Means Subcommittee tomorrow by Comprehensive Neurosciences, which is proposing exactly that, and that is a broader drug utilization review for the mental health drugs in an effort to contain some of those costs, but at the same time statutorily codify the carve-out, or basically statutorily codify current practice, what it is we're doing today with regard to mental health medications, but to put that into statute rather than simply rely on the administrative carve-out as it is now.
Senator Brown.
Thanks. If I could just sort of follow up on the discussion for either one of you, I guess I'm sort of having a hard time envisioning a system where you have a person with a severe mental illness with a depression component and a psychotic component, and how you would manage the depression component under managed care and the psychotic component under fee-for-service. I mean, what would be the practical implications of that? And I guess I'm not clear as to what the access barriers would be.
I'm not sure what the intent was, Chair Winters, members of the committee. Our concern is that for those who have serious mental illnesses, that if antidepressants are part of that array, that if the antidepressants are managed by the health care plans, that they could be subject to a formulary or to prior authorization methods that may make it very difficult for them to easily get exactly the antidepressant that might best complement the array of medications that they are taking. In addition, our population often finds it very difficult to even make it to the doctor, and therefore any access barriers for us seem to present huge implications in terms of the quality of their care.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wesley.
I don't disagree with anything Angela said, that the severe, persistent, and chronically mentally ill need access to and should not be restricted from whatever the mix of drugs. I mean, Angela and I have talked about this. The issue is we're trying to get not to the population that Angela is addressing, and I would submit that most of that population, you know, does not go to a primary care physician for their psychiatric care. If by chance they did, the relationship was such, the qualifications, the background of that particular physician, within the fully capitated health plans, they have their exceptions process. I cannot imagine a physician not writing a given prescription for whatever drug, brand name or otherwise, that individual, I mean, many times they have to go through 4, 5, 6, 8, 10 different drugs within each and every one of the fully capitated health plans. And this is one of the real pluses of a fully capitated health plan. I mean, this is local/regional health care delivered by physicians in local areas that have vested interest in the community. I just can't see where this is really the problem that is being purported to be. These individuals need those drugs.
Senator Minnis.
I think this is kind of the quandary that we face, and there is kind of a comparison with Senate Bill 819, and kind of the reason that we did carve out some of these mental health drugs was that there are some patients that are denied access because the physician will not go the extra step of calling the PBM or go through the hoops of getting the clearance to get a drug other than what's on the formulary list. And it's a quandary because it's either you educate the doctors, who sometimes appear uneducable in that category because they have their own little attitudes, or, you know, I guess my bias is you let the physician who's treating the patient make the best decision, which is that's the policy that's represented in Senate Bill 819. So I'm having a little bit of difficulty here trying to discern this primary care physician versus a specialist, et cetera, here. It just seems to me that the physician ought to be the one making the decision, period.
Senator Brown.
Senator Minnis, I don't disagree, but I'm not sure that's any different under managed care or fee-for-service.
Here's the issue. If you start reading the material and the on PBMs, pharmaceutical benefit management companies, and formularies, what you find is that there are certain strategies that are applied in PBMs and relationships that PBMs have with certain kinds of drug companies that set up barriers. There are artificial barriers to access to certain drugs. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't ultimately get them. It means you have to jump through a series of hoops. And what we know is, and I think it's the truth, that some physicians simply will not go that extra step. They'll use the drug that appears first on the formulary and not go to a PBM. And sometimes PBMs steer people to specific drugs because they actually get money for doing it. And you'll find that in the data and the documentation.
Well,
and audits of PBMs, by the way.
I think that was a concern that we all shared when we passed Senate Bill 819. And, you know, we're back at Senate Bill 819 because we're dealing with the population that doesn't always have the wherewithal to get to the doc in the first place, doesn't sometimes have the same kind of capacity that some of us on this panel have. And I think the concern has always been to assure that at least they were getting the medication that they deserved, that they needed in a very timely fashion. And that was Senate Bill 819.
I'm sure there's one other very significant point, at least in my thinking, and I'm a neophyte at this. These populations are very difficult populations.
Yeah.
And if you make it difficult for them to access these medications, they're not going to try. If the physician's not doing it, it's a quandary. It's a problem. You'll save money if you apply this principle. There's no doubt you'll save money. So to me, the question is the trade-off bad health care for mental health patients?
Since I know it's coming down, I'm up.
We're up, Dr. Bates.
I'm not going to say anything more at this point, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Dash 19.
In this case, what the A19s do is modify the concept of who can enter into an administrative services contract and would allow a mental health organization to contract with the department as well as a fully capitated health plan. And this would also require that a fully capitated health plan or an MHO that had the contract in a designated area would have to work with the other entities in order to manage drugs.
Up or down? Up. Are we up? Consensus? Up.
The 822s actually, in part, delete Section 10 in its entirety and adds a new section. I think you can consider these separate entities because obviously the department, they're not deleting Section 10 as it is. There is a new concept in here, however, that would exempt the purchase of medical supplies by the department from public contracting law and also requires the department to provide training on and forms on prior authorization.
I thought we took that off.
Yeah, we did.
We did?
Yep.
We took that off. The purchase of medical supplies by DH from public contracting law. That was that one conversation yesterday.
Okay, we can go to this. No.
We took that off.
The second piece,
Jacqueline, was still on. Is that correct?
Okay. And that can be done. I mean, that decision can be made here.
Okay.
So then there would be a new section added requiring the department to provide standardized forms and training on prior authorization.
Right. Madam Chair.
Senator Brown.
I assume there's a fiscal on that.
Chair Senator Brown, having, I doubt this is even gotten down that far in the building, but I would have to guess that there probably is.
It probably
thank
didn't.
You.
Maybe the AAAs have to absorb it or something.
Senator. Madam Chair requires the department.
Senator Manning.
Well, wasn't the discussion yesterday that the department could already do a standardized form of prior authorization? Could. They could do it if they chose to an existing rule. So I thought that's where we left it.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Senator Manning, I don't remember that, the specifics.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for my own clarification, what did you just do with the A22s then?
The discussion right now is only whether to include this training requirement and the standardized forms on there.
No.
Never mind.
Okay.
25.
That was an okay. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Okay. The A25s, there was some language inserted in the original bill that if the department were to enter into some of these new types of contracts, that they would have to be cost neutral. What the A25s do is that requires that the ASO or the administrative services contracts would also have to be cost neutral to the department.
I'll go with the chair. Good thing, bad thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's fine.
Then we go to section 11, which is the addresses the issue of the current. This is a continuation of the discussion about the carve out, and there's. I think the place to start is probably with the A14s, which is whether or not this committee wants to proactively maintain the current carve-out, which includes specifically the antipsychotics and the antidepressants. I understand that the A19s, which talks about, I think uses the word psychiatric drugs, is probably too broad. But that's the first. I mean, the committee can do a number of things with Section 11. One is to delete it entirely and let the status quo be maintained and the statute silent. The second option is to codify what the actual carve-out is currently, and that's the language in the A14s. The A19s do something similar, but have are in terms of psychiatric drugs, which may be too broad. To address that, they may be broader than I think was intended. And then this issue about institutional pharmacies, I'm not sure what to do with in that case.
Need to clean up the language anyway.
Right. So, I think the first question is, does the committee want to either delete this section in its entirety, which is in front of the committee, and leave the status quo as an administrative practice, or do they want to codify it in the statutes?
John?
I'm just going to suggest we delete it and codify existing practice. Just let existing practice stand, but I want to flag it if there needs to be further discussion.
That's 14?
This whole section.
The whole section.
I mean, if the instruction is to leave section 11 and leave the status quo,
That's what I'm thinking, then flag it for further discussion if it's necessary.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Is that a consensus, Senator Fisher?
Well, I guess how much of this is going to happen if we don't codify some of it? Where's the trust level?
Which is happening
now? I guess, we can flag it and come back and revisit it, but the trust level is going to be with everything we do, really. Senator Menes.
Well, if we don't do this, the trust level isn't with us. The trust level
is with me.
With OMAP.
I'm sure. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying let's delete it for now and bring it back after you get the codification of the bill. I think there are some other broader.
There's some other broader. Don, you have something else coming up, don't you, that would take in this? Doesn't your amendment 13 help this?
Well, I think it does.
We're not walking away from it, Senator Fisher. It's just for now, and we'll flag it and come back.
Yeah, Madam Chair, how many meetings are we going to have?
No more than Friday.
To reflag.
One more.
Senator Courtney, one more meeting is all that we're scheduled to have.
How much are we going to leave to them to do final decision on?
That's your final decision day.
On amendments that are issues, you could draft those separately, and that would take that. And you're probably going to be in. That's okay. Can you give us 48 hours to...
Could we do that?
Madam Chair, I think so. If Senator Brown will be so kind as to restate what she wants, we can do
that. On those that are problematic, if we could have them drafted separately, but give us 24 hours with which to have them to review them.
So, Madam Chair, if it would be okay, what I would like to do is to have the comprehensive amendment probably include the deletion and then have all of these policy choices in other baby amendments.
That's a serious question.
That Senator, 10 minutes.
Because I'm trying to figure out where Senator Fisher is going. Are you looking at the A11 amendment as it applies to Section 11?
Yeah.
Because
and
I thought
the A12.
Okay, I thought we already did the A11 amendment. Maybe I'm not following here.
We kind of skipped right over them.
Right. A11 adds language to Section 11, and I think Senator Fisher may be interested in that, but I thought we dealt with the institutional pharmacy issue.
Section 10, there's a dash.
Well, it's there. I don't want to say this. Hold on a minute. Of course, I don't have my 11s. I'm searching for 11. Hold on a minute. I know in the 11th that there's a question of institutional pharmacy.
Senator Brown,
where to put it in?
I'm not so concerned with the A11, the A12 in under Section 11. What I'm concerned about is the 14, the 19 under Section 11 and the carve-out for antidepressants. And I don't know what the vote was in terms of the carve-out on antidepressants. My concern here is that... I think we could carve this out into this whole issue into a separate amendment. And I guess I'd like some clarification about folks that are severely mentally ill, if those folks are even covered under the managed care provision or not, and what number we're talking about there. I mean, if we're carving out the antidepressants because of our concern for people with severe mental illness, those might come under one of the other exemptions. And if that's the case, the whole debate is sort of moot. If we're concerned about it for other reasons, then it's not.
Madam Chair.
Well, does that make sense, Holly?
I'm with you.
Okay. Senator Fisher, your concern
with... Can we have consensus on 11 and 12 then, as it would be reworded according to the definition of...
I'm fine with that, but I thought we already did it. Did we not already do it?
I thought we did.
It required repeating in a couple of these.
All right. I mean, if it requires repeating, I'm fine.
That's
with
fine.
It.
We're fine with
sure.
that.
All right. I'll just
we're fine
this.
With 14.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're Section 12.
We got a question on 14.
Section 12 does a number of things. First of all, it contains a provision right now that would prohibit a hospital from declining to treat a person who health services are provided by a fully capitated health plan. It directs the hospital to, it does not have a contract, to accept the reimbursement rates and says that the hospital has to provide the services. And you have a number of amendments. Mm-hmm. They... The dash sunset removes Section 12 in its entirety and deletes the requirement that hospitals not decline. It requires FCHIPS to reimburse hospital at either bill charges or a certain percentage of Medicare, and there would be a blank. And then it would exempt type A and type B's from this payment system. And finally, it establishes a procedure for non-binding arbitration. Hospitals and the FCHIP can't agree to an agreement or a contract
in response to Senator Morissette's question from early on, the Type A and high Type B hospitals get, have other statutes that apply to how they get paid. This section was never intended to apply to those hospital payments in the first place. And so all of the amendments exempt the Type A and Type Bs from this different reimbursement system because right now they are reimbursed.
Well, it was called my attention that this exempting them leads to some confusion as to whether or not they're exempt from all of the sections or just the one section.
I think it actually says the type B's and B's, A's and B's are exempt from this section.
Yeah, from this section.
This section, if it doesn't, I'll make sure that it does. Because it would still leave this section.
Consensus?
No.
For which one?
Senator Hannan, before we go to consensus.
Well, I want to ask Holly as a follow-up to Senator Morissette. Does this exemption on A and B, is the federal exemption or is there a state exemption that already is in place that exempts them out of these requirements?
Madam Chair, Senator Hannan, there are two statutes right now that talk about how the department has to pay a Type A and Type B hospital. They get paid at cost. Billed charges or costs something, something. And so those statutes stay in place. We're not touching them. And the intent of this was never to touch the statutes that currently exist on how A's and B's get paid.
Okay.
But we didn't make it clear that all of this fight about the reimbursement was not applying to A and B's. And so it should say, if it doesn't, that this section specifically does not apply to type A's, not the entire bill.
Madam Chair.
And if I will confirm that when I do the amendments, but it clearly was only to make it clear that we were not trying to change how A's and B's were getting paid.
Okay. Senator Hannan.
And does the A-10, does that take out the prohibition on the hospitals?
It does.
Madam Chair, Senator Hannan, yes, I think it does.
It's the A-12s that are not represented on.
Yes, it's the A-12s, but the A-10s and the A-12s overlap. It's in this case, the decisions are, do you want the no-decline policy in or out? That's one set of decisions. The second set of decisions is, do you want this non-arbitration piece? That's in both. Do you want, and then the third set of decisions is, do you want the reimbursement to be set at bill charges, the lesser bill charges, or a blank of Medicare, or do you want the blank filled in? That's kind of your column A and column B.
You said yesterday we wanted the blank left there.
I think
I think we talked about leaving the blank rather than 80%.
Okay.
And I'd like to leave the prohibition in there.
The current bill? The current status of the bill?
Yeah.
The A-12. All right.
That leaves the issue of the non-binding arbitration, the ability to get some arbitration assistance if the F-chips in the hospitals want it.
Yep.
Madam Chair?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think everybody's okay.
Yeah, I think Holly hit on the key. We wrestled with this a long time, trying to figure out a way that the F-chips and the hospitals could enter into some type of arbitration negotiations while setting the rate. Currently, it's if they can't come to contractual terms, it automatically falls back to the fee-for-service level, which gives the hospital, gives the F-chips an advantage in the negotiations. Okay, we negotiated. We couldn't reach a deal. We're going back to the fee-for-service level. So we're trying to raise the rate for hospitals while at the same time requiring hospitals to take, as part of their social contract, all members that are fully enrolled or enrolled in fully capitated health plans. That's what we're trying to get to. And I think it's fair that we leave this rate blank to continue the discussion. I think it's equally fair that the hospitals have to take the patients. And I think it's fair for both parties that there be some type of arbitration process if the negotiations between the F-chips and the hospitals break down. So I think we're heading in the right direction here. And I think it's fair we exempt the A's and B's.
Just have a question. If we take the rates away, is that still your same position?
If we do what?
Well, if you are not having the rate increase, where is your position then?
Well, there's always new information coming out of this. You know, we learned more this morning. That's one of the reasons I'm saying leave it blank.
This is not
We've got a consensus? Okay.
That we're not adopting these.
Different bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Four bits and pieces. I think I have them all.
Could you go over?
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
The prohibition against declining a patient will stay in the bill. That there will be a reimbursement scheme that the hospitals will have to take the lesser of bill charges or some blank percentage of Medicare. That there will be a provision about non-binding arbitration, and that procedure will stay in. And fourth, A and B hospitals will be exempting from this particular section. And I think that covers it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
I know we've just been moved on, but it would appear to me that while we're trying to craft a plan to today and bring partners on board, that we also build the kind of relationships where people wouldn't mind being a partner. And I don't know whether we just did that or not in terms of the hospitals and how they are reimbursed. And moving right along.
The next section then has to deal with the mail order pharmacy provisions and whether or not you want to add language that would require any FCHIP or PCO that wanted to get into the mail order pharmacy business, that they would be required to use the same pharmacy as the department. And the amendment in front of the committee would also exempt Kaiser and has a repeal provision of January 2008.
Yeah, I need this.
I have one up, two, three, four, okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
There was discussion yesterday that the 812 amendment had some effect on the Section 12, and we ignored that as we went through here this time.
You mean 820?
Yeah, 812 has some effect on here, but it was not put in.
No, down here.
I don't.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Senator.
I know we're down here, but I'm going back to Section 12.
Oh, you want me to go back to Section 12?
There was a reference made yesterday to the 812 amendment having been left out. A portion of it was left out of this.
No, in what I've been doing, I got it added. It came out of my mouth, even though it's on the paper.
All right. Okay. I just wanted, I had a note
punted
here to check that out.
Yep, I think we're fine.
Okay.
Section 13, then, is the section dealing with the pharmacy benefit manager system. The first request is to exempt institutional pharmacies from this for all the same reasons that you've heard up until this point.
Is the sidebar all right with this?
Okay. The second one adds, and the language that we've been including, that we've been adding in as we go, which is requiring that these contracts be cost neutral and that the contractors have capacity and competence to administer the contracts or the services.
What is different about that than what's in the bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Wesson, we just didn't get it into all of the sections.
You're over on the Senate time. You got to get acknowledgement from the chair before you talk to the... This is not the House.
Madam Chair, I humbly beseech you to ask what's different about this than is in the bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Wesson, we just didn't include it in all the sections, and the decision was made to have that same requirement apply to all of the contracts.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair, I apologize for answering this question. He just has me well-trained to jump.
Well, he hasn't been sufficiently trained yet.
He has me sufficiently trained.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morissette.
In the discussion of the PBM and the pharmacy benefits administrator and so on, there was some discussion of audits, and I think we said that an audit is possible under
Yes.
Existing rules. We don't need language to do audits. Is that right?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, the answer to your question, I think, is yes, and there's also some discussion about doing a separate audit bill.
A separate audit bill.
Those discussions are ongoing.
Okay.
We're on
13?
We're on 13. The A13s are part of Senator Minnis's amendments that
he's,
they would...
He's out of the room.
What do you want me to do?
No, go ahead.
You want me to go get him? This would add or specify that the PBM system would be subject to the practitioner managed prescription drug program, and it adds a prospective DUR requirement for high drug use, and also addresses the department's rule on the PDL and prior authorization.
Are we going to be up? Fine. We're fine.
The A25s modify this concept, and they establish what is a pharmacy benefits administrator rather than a manager. A pharmacy benefits administrator is basically what First Health, which is doing it now, is. The difference primarily, there are many differences. One of them is that generally it has to do with the negotiation of rebates. Okay. With the pharmaceutical manufacturer.
No. 13. It's on.
Okay.
Thumbs up. It's fine.
Madam Chair. Question, Madam Chair. Holly, is there anything in this section that requires the F-chips to be in the amendments that we are conceptually or directing you to conceptually draft? Is there anything in this section that requires the F-chips to be to utilize the services of the state PBM or, I guess, now PBA?
Madam Chair, Representative Westland, no.
Okay. Just got these nice little capsules here in front of me, but...
Oh, there is some other stuff in here, too.
We're okay. We're at section 14.
Yeah, there is
section 15.
There is some language. Actually, this didn't get put into the. Let's see, we're in the A25 that talks about. There are some additional requirements that were proposed in the A25s, but we'll all discuss them in the A28. Never mind. Okay, let's. Then we go to section 15. This is the supplemental rebate and prescription drug purchasing pool, and this again adds the language that represents that Senator Minnis requested, making it subject to the PDL.
Consensus. Okay.
The Section 18 change is the operative date change from a date certain of October 1st to a date contingent on waiver, the waiver approval.
We need it.
Yeah.
We do.
Okay. And then, going to the bottom of that page, there are some new sections that are... one new section that was requested, and that was that the department pay for services provided by a nurse practitioner in a rural health clinic if the clinic is more than 15 miles from the a person or entity that provides services to that person on a prepaid as part of a plan.
Excuse me. Where are we, Madam Chair?
We're on section 20-6.
Okay.
And we had a lot of discussion about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
They get full cost reimbursement anyway, don't they?
Come on, Holly.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative West.
I humbly beseech you again. Aren't they fully cost reimbursed anyway?
Madam Chair, Representative Westland, I believe so.
Excuse me, I did not hear the answer.
No.
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 Somebody gets a piece off the top.
Now, the additional thing, the additional sections that are at the bottom of that second page, and I think the top of the third page, well, no, we'll get to the top of the third page, has already been done. And so I think the best place to go now is to the A26s and the A28s. These are new and have pieces that were not included. And I think the place to start and make this easiest for the committee, given the hour of the day, is there was a request made to the committee that the fully capitated health plans report certain information to the department. The A26s contains all of the information that was requested by to the department by the FCHIPS. And the A28s asked that only the pharmaceutical rebate pieces be done, and that would be, and if you look on the A28s on the second page, you can see the difference between the A26s and the A28s. So the committee is going to have to decide what kind of report they want, whether they want a long report or a short report.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator. Len Hinn.
Holly, on the dash 26, uh-huh. 826 amendment, is it important to have quarterly statement of outstanding provider claims and all that? Why would that information be required?
Madam Chair, Senator Hannon, I believe, and I shouldn't speak, I hopefully they'll get some nods in front of you, behind me. I think those that were wanting or interested in the additional information would be satisfied with the more limited information that was going to be provided in the report that's now in the on page 2 of the A28s. I can't speak to why somebody wanted this, but I think that they did. We're happy with lesser information, which is now the new section 20 on page 2 of the A28.
Senator Herron, I have been directed by the committee administrator to call Tom Holt to the microphone. Would you object or agree with that request?
Well, I don't care who comes up. I'm just trying to find out why we need to have all this information made available.
I think he's just come up. He's going to say something.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Holt with the Oregon State Pharmacists Association. I guess I should apologize for creating some confusion where there was none. Reason for the difference between the two amendments was our misunderstanding of what Senator Minnis requested in yesterday's hearing. His amendment, I believe, is the A26. In answer to Senator Hannon's question, the reason for these various reports was to be able to provide a regular statement of that would basically be a regular statement of financial condition. Can be a good way for the department to monitor the condition of the plans, and for providers to be able to monitor the condition of the plans, and that was why we requested that. Our intention in the 28th was simply to try and comply with what Senator Minnis seemed to be saying, but we obviously misunderstood that. So we would recommend the 26th version.
I understand, Senator Hannon, at least I understand that. That ties into a discussion we had yesterday. I don't know what's going on 28.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, a little clarification. Who's in charge?
Well, you know, it's the Courtney Winter Show, so sometimes it's Senator Courtney.
So who's in charge right now?
Right now, I mean, I'm back.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
Tom, the information you're requesting here is not necessarily from the state in terms of its direction of the plan, but from the planned membership piece.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I'm not quite sure I understood your question. Would you mind trying again?
Okay. You're talking about all members that are part of that take part, that are partners with the OHP plan, that the partner memberships give this information to the state.
Chair Winters, Senator Carter, yes, the FCHPs would be reporting this information.
Okay.
Well, Madam Chair, all the fee for service would have to provide this information, right?
Chair Winters, Senator Hannon, as I understand it, the...
Yeah, I'm a druggist in Timbuktu, and I want to know what's happening with the fee for service provider. So they would have to provide that documentation to me to show me what their cash flow is, what their outstanding rate of billing is, when they pay, how they pay. All that information would be made available to me, right?
Chair Winters, Senator Hannon, no, not the fee for service, the managed care plans information. So, yes, a provider such as a pharmacy or a physician's practice could then look at that information and they could make a judgment, for example, if they're looking at a contract of whether or not that provider is paying properly, whether or not they're in reasonable financial condition relative to the Oregon Health Plan.
Representative Weston, you're learning.
Slow, but I am trainable, Madam Chair. We have a representative from the fully capitated health plans here. Maybe that individual could come forward and say what they currently do. I believe it's pretty similar to what is requested in the A26s.
Are they?
Yes. There's anyone else that wouldn't have said distinguished representative.
Senator Winters, Chairman Winters, my name's Jan Buffa, and I manage the Marion Pope Community Health Plan in Marion Pope Counties. And if I understand the question correctly, the question is, what type of information do we provide to OMAP, to the state? And we have historically provided solvency reports on a quarterly basis. Those solvency reports are turned into OMAP. Those are public. Any individual can go in and access those documents. And we do so as a plan. We quarterly go in and access everybody's solvency reports and prepare quarterlies, which we share amongst comparatives, which we share amongst the plans. Certainly, any other individual or agency is capable of doing that also, but my feeling is that those solvency reports, if they're done properly, provide that information as to whether the plan's solvent or not.
Representative Weston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jan, is that codified any place? Is that required, or is that something you just do?
No, sir. Chairman Winters and Representative Westland, that is by contract with OMAP. We're required to turn in those reports.
And one more question, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Have you had a chance to look at the A26s?
Chairman Winters and Representative Westland, I have not looked at those specifically today, no.
I guess the question is, do we need to put this in a bill if the agency is already requiring that?
Right. Why do we do this?
Can I ask Mr. Holt a question?
Senator Carter.
I'm glad you didn't follow me, Senator Winters.
We got confused today, so that's okay.
Tom, can you tell me why do you think this language is necessary, and if there's something outstanding that partners have missed? Because I can understand that being a pharmacist and some other partner that you have in the plan does not pay you on time, does not pay you right, and you don't have certain information. And is that what you're saying by this language?
Chair Winters, Senator Carter, essentially, yes. And there is one other element here that we shouldn't overlook, and that's the reporting of aggregate rebate dollars from the manufacturers, and that's in both the 26s and 28s. But yes, you're exactly correct.
Senator Carter.
I'm just up.
it's, I don't think it has any negative factor. So I just soon leave it in, and we can deal with it. Okay. 26.
Madam Chair, there's one other. That, I think that takes care of everything.
Consensus on 26, Madam Chair?
Yes. I didn't see that. It's not. It's just telling the agency that make sure they make it.
Okay.
And some
people
want to see that. Okay. Whatever it is, that's the easy. Okay.
I have one. I left something out. Could you I left more than one thing out, but there's something obvious I left out that I want to bring to the committee's attention. If you, since you all are, I assume you're all holding the A28s.
Mm-hmm.
There is some language that the same group has requested that has to do with the ASO contracts that were discussed in Section 10. And if you go to line 15 of the amendment, it talks about the contracts for pharmaceutical, for the prescription drug management, and it adds some additional requirements, those being that the electronic transfers of payments available to the provider at no cost. They make payments to pharmacies at intervals of not less than 14 days. And then the same line, which has the capacity services. So I wanted to bring those to the committee's attention since they have been in front of the committee. They just didn't get on the list.
And that refers to section?
This refers to the ASO section and talks about the things that the department would have to consider if in making these contracts. These are additional contract requirements.
Section.
Madam Chair, I don't find a problem with A28, because I'm trying to recall, I think we passed some language to this effect before in terms of timely payments to outstanding debtors or to partnerships, and so mine would be a consensus vote up.
Is there any thumbs down on A28? And no one has a problem, so guess what?
Madam Chair, I think we're done for now. I would like to have the caveat that if I...
I had some conversations with...
Madam Chair, I want to go back to something.
A second. Okay. With Senator Brown on the Section 11 and go ahead and include those for now, and rather than setting them aside separately, and we can deal with it on Friday.
And include which?
14th and 19th. No. Oh, which one?
Yeah, do you want me to include 14, which is the language that specifically maintains the status quo?
Right.
Madam Chair, the other thing I want to put on the record is in Section 3, the -821, exempting people with serious or chronic health conditions. I am concerned that it's extremely broad and vague, and it will basically include everybody in the system, or at least 90% of the people in the system. So I just want to put people... I don't know where the line is. I just want to express concern about that. Thank you.
You want to make sure we're a little more specific.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Carter, any other questions?
Same concern.
Same concern. Senator Barsett, and then Senator Nunes.
Section 27, amendment 27 is Section 3. That replaces 25, exempts people residing in long-term care facilities and so on. What about people who are disabled and live in their own homes? Should they be included?
Well, that's the only reason institutional people are excluded, because the arrangement with them is a little different.
The ones in their own home, Madam Chair, are not in the waiver.
In the waiver.
They're not in the waiver.
Okay. So we've got to get them in the waiver first. Okay. Send them in.
I want to flag one other issue that kind of escaped my attention. It's the issue of the, and Senator Richard Leslie might be able to help. When we mandate hospitals to treat patients, and then we also have another hospitals are going to contract with the FDA. And you, if you mandate that they treat, and then there's an assumption that you contract, doesn't the mandate undermine the need to have a contract or to get the parties together to reach an agreement to a contract?
I believe that was the issue that Senator Carter was raising.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure. I've had a multiple conversation, but I do want to bring that back because I'm a little unsure. I like the idea of the mandate that to the hospitals, but I'm not sure about the whole contractual language and what the actual effect of that is. So, and I don't even know what a resolution to the problem would be at this juncture, but I think that needs to be flagged.
We need to flag that and revisit that there is not the consensus on that language.
Madam Chair, I also would like the opportunity for the record to reflect that if I missed pieces, which is highly likely, it was not intentional, and that I will either include them because they're clarifications or I will do an extra set of amendments that has whatever I left out, but was not intentional.
We will so note, because we know that we have put you on this tremendous short timeline, and you have done, and staff, an incredible job, and we thank you. And if we could have these tomorrow.
What are you doing tonight?
That was very well done.
With that, I believe we are, yes.
One question and clarification. Section 5, the A18s. Which allows DHS flexibility in using the Cooper criterion determining whether to contract with a physician care organization. Does that, Holly, in any way allow them not to consider the, I think it was three criteria that we had in the bill, the mandatory criteria?
Madam Chair, Representative Westland, it says now that they have to consider them as opposed to absolutely follow them. So it just gives them a little flexibility. The intent of this was to say, rather than applying them, they just have to.
Senator Menace.
I just want to ask the council to look at the issue of whether or not we can enforce a binding arbitration mechanism with FSHIPs and hospitals.
Madam Chair, Senator Ramirez, can you repeat your question?
Well, we have non-binding arbitration with respect to these contracts. Can we say binding arbitration?
Madam Chair, Senator Ramirez, absolutely.
Can we force them to contract?
You can force them to arbitrate and accept the terms.
All right. So that's, we can do that. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we are adjourned. No more further questions. We are adjourned until 8 a.m.